That was Making Contact's Pauline Bartoloni speaking with Pierre Labossière from the Haiti Action Committee back in January, in the weeks after the deadly earthquake. So the question is, almost 1 year later, is history repeating itself? Are the Haitian people becoming more self-sufficient, or has this tragedy become another chance for foreign governments and investors to take advantage of Haiti? To find out more, we're joined by journalist Ansel Hers. Ansel was in Haiti when the quake struck, and he's been there throughout 2010, watching and reporting as the recovery unfolds. Ansel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
So to start off, a big picture question. How are things going in Haiti in terms of society recovering? What have been kind of the highlights and lowlights of the past year?
Well, it's really much of the same. I think for people familiar with Haiti, they know that the status quo in the country for, you know, over two decades has been one of total and absolute poverty. Not only in Port-au-Prince, where I'm based, which is an overcrowded capital city where just way too much of the services provided by NGOs are concentrated. Haiti's often been called a republic of NGOs. And meanwhile, in the rest of the country, in the countryside, really it is an agricultural country where the majority of the population are peasants, and that's often forgotten. You know, out there as well, it's people are extremely poor, and there's high levels of malnourishment and lack of health care. Right now, there's a cholera epidemic. I think most people are aware that's really rampaging throughout the country. It's killed upwards of 2,000 people. I think in a sense, there's multiple humanitarian crises that are piled on top of each other, because there's cholera, which is on top of 1.3 million people still living in refugee camps or makeshift tent camps, whatever you want to call them, all around the capital city. These are people who lost their homes in the January earthquake and are still living in camps where often they don't have access to toilets, to water. You know, nothing has been given to them in terms of compensation for lost belongings. So it's just kind of the same as it was almost right after the January earthquake. You know, in terms of highs, there really aren't many that you can point to in this past year for Haiti. It's just kind of been one disaster on top of another. There was a hurricane that almost hit the country back in October, and luckily passed away and didn't hit the country directly, but did cause flooding and deaths. And now in the past month, also, we've had a fraudulent election that was financed by the international community and is seemingly being imposed on the country. So I guess that gives people a sense of just the problems here, which seem to stack one on top of the other. And it doesn't look like things are changing in any kind of radical way, such that, you know, these problems could be untangled from one another and Haitians could be given the ability to raise themselves out of this situation.
For a few weeks in January, there were lots of promises of massive amounts of aid for Haiti. We had world leaders, celebrities, international bodies claiming that this would be the time when a real investment was made to rebuild a country that, like you said, has been in dire need for decades. Has that aid come through?
No, it hasn't really. You know, the United States, out of many countries, pledged money, pledged over $1 billion, and a tiny fraction of that has arrived. Meanwhile, $1 billion was spent in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake, largely on the U.S. military's operations here, through which a lot of the immediate relief was funneled. So there's that money that's been spent. But beyond that, actual money for reconstruction that was promised by the government of Barack Obama and the United States, almost none of that money has arrived. Meanwhile, longstanding development policies by the United States government through USAID, its development agency, continue to just actually further mire Haiti in poverty, particularly through the dumping of American rice, very cheap imported American rice, on this nation. Bill Clinton, the former president, made sort of a stunning admission earlier in the year. I guess maybe you could point to that as one of the highs this past year, where he acknowledged that pressuring the former government of Haiti, the government under President Aristide, to cut tariffs massively on rice imports back during the 1990s was what he called a devil's bargain. It was a huge mistake, he said, and he acknowledged that he has to live every day with the consequences of that in terms of the havoc that wrought on the agrarian economy of Haiti. You know, there are farmers, rice farmers out in the Artibonite Valley, the central plateau of Haiti, who were just devastated by that decision by, you know, international financial institutions with Clinton's leadership to you know, have Haiti accept these cheap imports of U.S. rice. And so we see that every day. I see that every day here in Port-au-Prince. People are eating white rice that comes from Arkansas. And meanwhile, Haitian farmers who produce rice that's actually better nutritionally for Haitians, it actually has much better nutritional content. That rice is too expensive for most people to buy. And those policies are you know, continuing. People have, you know, Oxfam, Partners in Health, other groups have been pointing out over and over again that this is one of the major factors that you know, contributes to Haiti's poverty. It's very easily reversible. It just takes a little bit of political will on the part of the United States, and yet it hasn't happened. So that's just one example of many that is continuing this status quo where Haiti is being impoverished directly by the United States as well as other countries' policy decisions that do not take into account the basic legitimate needs of farmers in this country.
And what about the issue of debt, which we heard about in our previous segment? There have long been calls for Haiti's foreign debt to be forgiven, and we saw a little bit of that this year. How much is left, and how is that affecting the chances for recovery?
In terms of debt, a lot of the foreign creditors and countries to which Haiti owed debts, I think those were often really illegitimate debts that were forced on the country. Many of those were forgiven right after the earthquake. I don't know the numbers offhand, but it's interesting because those numbers were really spun into and sort of included in what countries said they were pledging for reconstruction relief. And so if you look at the numbers, you know, however many million dollars Spain has pledged or France has pledged, really you have to look beneath the surface and figure out, you know, how much of that is new money and how much of that is illegitimate debt that they finally forgave after the earthquake. And of course, behind all this is $24 billion that France really owes Haiti. This is money that was extorted from the country right after its independence, after Haiti overthrew France. It was a colonial nation mired in massive slavery, and France was the colonial master in the country, and the Haitians, for really the first and only time in modern history, rose up from slavery and pushed the French out of the country over a period of over a decade. And right after that, France forced Haiti to pay a debt. France forced Haiti to pay a huge number of francs in that day as compensation for their lost property, the lost property of slaves. And France has never, paid that money back. And actually, the last government of Haiti, again, under former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, asked for that money back. Asked that France pay back the $24 billion, which is what the money amounts to today. And of course, France refused. And so that money, you know, to this day, I think is owed to Haiti, certainly could be used to you know, reconstruct the country now. And yet that still stands. So really Haiti is, I think, in terms of debts and money that it's owed, not in too much of a better spot than it used to be. Certainly the Haitian government itself continues to not receive very much of the aid that's pledged. Most of it gets funneled through NGOs and contractors, and so the Haitian government itself has a lot of difficulty just meeting its own budgetary demands and funding its police force, funding healthcare facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
And what about the role of the UN? They were there before the quake. They've been there in greater force since. What has been the UN's role? I know there have been some definite in your work and in others some controversial issues regarding the UN presence and what they're doing and not doing in Haiti.
Right. I mean, as you point out, the UN has been here now for about 6 years since Aristide was pushed out of the country in a coup d'etat. There's over 10,000 peacekeepers now in the country, and you know, day by day they drive around, particularly the capital of Port-au-Prince, in armored vehicles that look like tanks with guns hanging out, pointing down at Haitians who walk by. And really, they are the object of a lot of ire, I think, among the Haitian population, although they are credited with clamping down somewhat on gang activity. You know, it's just, I think the Haitian constitution itself forbids any foreign army on Haitian soil. And so just I think that in the past month or two, with the introduction of cholera to the country by the UN, according to really all the evidence that has been uncovered so far, a French epidemiologist was brought in to do a study, you know, journalists who went on the scene in the central plateau where the cholera outbreak began, found that it was a UN base where waste, human waste, was running off from the base. This is a base where Nepali peacekeepers were housed and are housed, and Nepal is a country where cholera is endemic. Haiti itself had never had cholera in the past century. You know, the UN basically refused to take responsibility for even the possibility that they had introduced cholera into the country, and that contributed to just a lot of anger, and they still haven't taken responsibility. You know, riots erupted in the northern city of Cap-Haïtien. And then here in Port-au-Prince, you know, I saw over the past week or two with these protests that erupted after the election, it was really interesting because the Haitian police often would come out and sort of supervise the protests and would get people to calm down a little bit. They would speak Creole, which is the native language here, to the protesters. And at times, these protesters who were sort of armed with rocks and various items, they calmed down and they chanted, "Long live the Haitian police, long live the Haitian police." And then as soon as the police left, and again, this is a police force that's really under-equipped in many instances, doesn't have a lot of support in terms of money or you know, materials. When they would withdraw and the UN peacekeepers were left to protect the headquarters of the Electoral Council, which is, again, the object of so much anger, you know, the protesters would start hurling rocks again and saying, cursing really at the UN peacekeepers and telling them to get the hell out of the country. And so I saw sort of a pitched street battle last week between Brazilian soldiers who fired, you know, dozens and dozens of rounds of tear gas and rubber bullets, and protesters on the other hand who just had rocks and bottles in their hands. I guess just what I'm saying is that this is another undercovered aspect, I think, of Haiti's lack of progress, you know, where so much of the humanitarian aid is being channeled through this militarized presence. Meanwhile, the UN peacekeepers are effectively, again, propping up a government that in many cases lacks popular legitimacy. And so with this kind of adding tension to the mix, with Haitians not really having full sovereignty in terms of the number of NGOs that are in the country and operating without much accountability, with a militarized peacekeeping presence, I don't see things changing anytime soon, unfortunately. And I just wonder if people shouldn't start to consider a timetable for withdrawal for this UN force, you know, 6 years after they entered the country.
And what about this past November's election, which, as we're speaking right now in mid-December, is still unresolved? Regardless of who's eventually declared the winner, there have been numerous accusations of fraud, disenfranchisement, and corruption. So how is this election, which it seems by any measure was pretty much a failure, affected the Haitian people and their hopes that political conditions and conditions for civil society in the country will improve?
Well, it's one in a long series, I think, again, of just really poor decision-making on the part of the Haitian government in this case, as well as the international community. You know, I was one of the few journalists who was here in Haiti before the earthquake and during. But I remember basically 1 year ago, almost exactly in December, the month before the January earthquake struck, There was a march of about 20 to 25,000 people, mainly supporters of Lavalas, which is the party of the ousted president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. They held a march where they began in these really impoverished slum areas of Cité-Soleil and Bel Air and went right up to the headquarters of the Provisional Electoral Council, which is the body that organizes the election. And even back then, at that time, elections were scheduled for February. They were saying that this election was basically fraudulent, that it would be a selection and not an election, that it wasn't going to be free and fair because Lavalas, their favored party, along with other political parties, was being and still is and was in the election when it finally happened last November, excluded from participating. And that was seen as really a transparently political and manipulative decision by the Haitian government, which has really blocked Aristide's party, Lavalas, from really participating in governance since Aristide was pushed out in 2004. So you know, even then, there was just a lot of tension and anger, at the Provisional Electoral Council in particular, which is the council that was handpicked by the president of the country, René Préval, and which was charged with organizing this election. Since then, the election was financed, again, by the international community, $14 million at least coming from the United States. The international community insisted that these elections go forward. They did not raise objections to the exclusion of these political parties. And then we saw on November 28th, an election happened that was, fraudulent, really, from any independent observer, whether those are Haitian civil society groups, several of which have issued joint statements condemning the election, pointing out the many instances of fraud, whether that's the international media. I myself saw polling stations that opened hours late, saw hundreds of people who weren't able to find their names on the electoral lists. I have a friend of mine, a Haitian journalist, who saw basically what amounted to ballot stuffing. And so really, this was just a massive waste of money, I think. Meanwhile, you have homeless people living in these tent camps still. And yet this election really, it seems, is being pushed forward now by the Haitian government with the backing of the international community. They've not acknowledged that it was an instance really of just fraud. They're saying that there were some irregularities, but the election can go forward. Meanwhile, there were protests that erupted immediately after that election took place because I think many Haitians understood it to be fraudulent. And so for the moment, those protests have died down. They sort of paralyzed the Capitol last week, but they could, start up again. And really, as long as the government in this country lacks popular legitimacy, as long as it's being bitterly contested by factions who see it as propped up by the international community, I don't see how Haiti is going to really be able to make sustainable progress in the future, and that's really unfortunate, and I think that the United States bears responsibility for that as well.
We've been speaking with independent journalist Ansel Hirsch. His website is mediahacker.org, and we'll link to some of his work on our website, radioproject.org. Ansel, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew.